Hey guys, welcome to the Martial and Healing Arts channel. I'm Rafe Kelly, founder of Evolve Move Play. I'm extremely excited to be sponsoring this channel. Martial and Healing Arts have been key aspects of embodiment and self-cultivation for thousands of years. I have some of my best friends in the industry, Rory Miller, Matt Thornton, Edward Hines, presenting here, and I'm really excited to share what they have to say with you guys. You're gonna love it. So Evolve Move Play is an ecology of practices of movement, mindfulness, nature connection, and community. And within the movement, we have a big emphasis on moving in nature and being able to do parkour. We also like to lift weights and throw things around, but there's a huge aspect of martial arts, and I've been training martial arts since I was 6 years old. So it's really exciting to be able to sponsor this channel in particular. If you're interested in my work, check out my talks on the Main Stage and the Movement Anatomy channel. If you can't get to either of those live, you can check us out at Rafe Kelly on Instagram, get all your awesome embodiment giveaways, and for now, just enjoy this amazing channel. It's gonna be an awesome show.
I am very honored to announce the session with James File, who is a doctor of chiropractic and has studied formative psychology, craniosacral biodynamics, and pre- and perinatal therapy with top names in the field. Mr. File has taught in the US, through Europe, and in China, and he works with adults using verbal and body-oriented techniques, specializing in this informative and somatic methodologies, helping individuals form themselves to effectively and competently respond to life's transitions, challenges, crises, and opportunities. So, Mr. File, the show is yours.
Great. Well, thank you, Rocco. Great. So, nice to be here. And it's just been a wonderful conference so far. I've been tuning in to some of the presentations, and it's amazing how many compelling stories people have, you know, really potent stories with underpinned by great ideas, by a lot of deep experience, and very convincing on many levels, and really wonderful to be in this environment. And I figure with 1,100 presenters, I'm looking for a presenter that actually gives my talk at the same time that I give mine. It seems like the percentages are such that at least large pieces of what I do may be presented in other places. Certainly it feels like a lot of us are riding in the same carriage, a lot of similar values and the discoveries of things that overlap and resonate. And so I think there's a beautiful web that's forming here, kind of what they call the web that has no weaver, that as each presenter presents their story and presents their model and the possibilities of their work, a kind of wonderful web is being formed that's building a field very powerfully. And so it's very nice to be part of that, you know. And I've seen a number of presentations that it feels like not only is there a powerful underlying humanity that emerges out of people interested in this work, but they sometimes feel like they're touched by the gods, as they say, right? So really amazing things emerge. So anyway, it's been fun to be part of this. And it feels like all of us, to a great extent, are building special bridges. We're building bridges between really our everyday lives, the challenges, the difficulties, the crises, also the opportunities that show up. And so what we're looking for is to build a bridge between everything that captures our attention and holds us in the world and that we have to manage. And we're building a bridge between that and really the deepest resources that our bodies hold and bring with them through a very long evolution. And so building this bridge between the somewhat chaotic everyday world and the depth and the profound problem solving that we find as part of our inheritance, our genetic inheritance, is a very interesting process. And there's so many ways to build that bridge. And in a way, each person from their experience and their study and just their constitution builds that bridge in their own way. And then of course that for people who are watching the programs, you know, they can test out, sniff out, taste many different styles of building this bridge. Some are extremely active and explosive and varied, and others are quieter and build connections in a very soft, deeper way. And but you know, that's what we're all kind of working with, and then dealing with our arousal and our thinking and our feeling, and in a way, situating it as signals that help us build this bridge. So, you know, I'm teaching something that's called formative embodiment, and it's built to a great extent. At least one of my great influences is Stanley Kelleman for his formative psychology. But I'll mention it a little later. I've studied with a few interesting teachers. But the basic idea of formative embodiment is that the only way we have to know life is through the body, the whole body, right? We are life forms, and ergo formative, right? And so we know life through the body, but of course we have a changing body, right? We have a body that has so many different forms, right? We're prenates, and we're toddlers, and we're adolescents, and we're young adults, and then we're alpha adults, and then maturing, aging adults. And so the only way we really know what life is about and what embodiment is about really is about accompanying the whole life cycle. And that provides us with a vision that is ever wider, ever more complex. And so the challenges of embodiment and the opportunities of embodiment are different at different life stages. So what I consider embodiment is this: it's accompanying each of our life stages and accompanying the transitions, because the transitions are powerful moments. They're not just a single moment, but accompanying transitions. When I became 50 and suddenly realized I wasn't 30 anymore, you know, that's not such an easy transition. And I can't leap tall buildings in a single bound anymore, you know, like I could when I was 30, you know, and I begin to envision the future differently and inhabit my dreams differently. And all of those things are part of what we call the embodiment process. It's an embodiment really tied into the evolving form that I've been given and that I'm living. Yeah. And so, you know, each of us is kind of given this form, you know, a genetic, epigenetic form. We're given a kind of a biological inheritance, right? So in that sense, we're automatically embodied in this given form, this great form that nature has developed for us and possibly spirit has developed for us. But anyway, an evolving form over many, many millions of years. And so that, of course, expresses itself, shapes our lives. But we also, along with living that inheritance, that inherited form, there's also something about making it personal. You know, there's each of us has a need to take this body, this whole system that we have, and make it personal and leave a personal stamp. And so that's also part of formative, what we're calling formativeness, how to first, you know, appreciate this body that we have without an instruction manual, as some people have said. You know, we don't have an instruction manual. And so we start looking around for one, and we start building one, and we do our best to somehow begin to appreciate what this amazing system is that we have at our disposal. And, you know, and so, you know, so we each do our best in learning what the instructional manual is. And I think a lot of the presentations here are personal instruction manuals that have been developed by the presenters over time. So so this is kind of a little bit of the frame of what we're calling formative embodiment, which is to bring, I think, embodiment along with accompanying the life cycle is about bringing a conscious awareness to something that is a profound given, and to find out how much can I actually influence this inheritance, this genetic biological inheritance, because there are ways I can influence it, ways I can shape it, ways I can mold it, and then other ways that I can't. And that's part of, I think, what we learn, you know. And I think we learn it somewhat. Pardon me, that's an automatic thing that happens in my computer. So, you know, so we learn, you know, we learn kind of how to manage this. Over time, so sorry, that kind of distracted me, but anyway. So how do we, you know, how do we manage this ancient, you know, organism of great intelligence with all of its programs, all of its instincts, all of its survival capacities? And how do we build this personal dimension, this personal life field in a way that respects it? And, you know, I think, you know, we can have our own personal theories about things, such as, you know, one of the primary pathologies and actually what's considered to be the greatest cause of death in the world is heart problems, right? Heart pathologies are, you know, are the number one cause of death. And it's not just that the heart wears out, it's that in part, maybe we don't know how to manage our own hearts. You know, we're still learning about how to manage the whole organism, how to manage our cognition, our brains, right? And a lot of the embodiment process is learning how to manage these minds, these brains, these thinking machines so that they work for us, you know. But I think we're also learning how to manage, you know, our organ systems, right? Manage our expressive systems. So embodiment is all of these things. It's a really a large, it's a wonderfully large basket. So you know, we're going to talk a little bit, and then we'll have some exercises, not big physical exercises, but some processes as we get going that maybe help appreciate a little bit what this formative embodiment is, you know. So actually, why don't I jump? I have just a few little slides, a few images. Let's jump to those. And then, so just as kind of a, so I think, good, it's working, no? Okay, so you may have seen this many times. This is the famous iceberg, you know, and it's a beautiful image. You know, it's, you look at it and you can just see the beauty of the iceberg and the colors and the shapes and, you know, what happens when you resonate with that image, right? And, but of course we also have our thinking minds and we look at things and we build stories, you know, and we see metaphors, and that's just something the mind does. It's always associating and building connections and building stories and metaphors are important in our understanding things. And so, you know, I look at this iceberg and I see, you know, this is a wonderful metaphor for humans, right? That, you know, all the speakers that present in this program, for example, they have 50 minutes. That's a tip of an iceberg. They all have huge study and huge resources and a large internal life and unconscious. And what shows is this much, right? So that's true of the speakers, but it's true of all of us, right? The surface that is visible is very small, related to the big invisible underpinnings, right? That really enable the and support the visible. So the visible really is intricately dependent on the visible is intricately dependent on the invisible, which is huge, much larger. And of course, there are a lot of words for this, you know, there's the explicit and the implicit, right? And the conscious and the unconscious. And so this is there's a constant conversation. And yet, you know, and they are a unit, they are one thing, but something happens at the surface of the water, right? And so there's a transition, a phase shift. And so something happens, something goes from being visible to being invisible, right at a certain border, at a certain boundary. And so that's what we've been talking about is, you know, the bridge is already there. We talked about building bridges earlier, but the bridge is already there. It's all one already. And yet there's somehow these transitions that we need to negotiate between the visible and the invisible. And so even what I'm expressing right now is really has a huge background and underpinning, not just from my studies and from my experience, whatever, but just from my own biological history, right? And how the visible depends so much on so many things. So even the smallest movement depends on so much, right? And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go forward, right? This is an image you've seen in many ways, and I'm sure you've seen it much more elegantly presented. You know, they're beautiful, you know, 3D, you know, kind of presentations of this process. But of course, this is the embryological process, and this really holds, I show this just as kind of an image of the essence of formative embodiment, right? Again, we can look at this and we can do so much with the images of embryology. But basically what we have here in 6 weeks, right? We go from being two cells, pure protoplasm, and we go through so many shapes in so little time, right? We are so plastic and so fluid. And yet, you know, we begin to almost look a bit human by the sixth week. And so we are plastics. We are fluid forms that continue to change, right? And can you only imagine what would happen if as adults we changed our form this fast, right? We'd have no problem building, you know, kind of thinking that what is identity when your form changes this fast, right? Who are we? What are we? So, you know, our whole sense of identity and an ego and what we are is built on protoplasm that follows very organized rules, right? It is an incredibly precise process. So forming has great precision, right? Not just in embryology, but it has great precision in our adult lives. And that's why it's worth studying, I think, formativeness. What are the rules of formativeness, of forming? How do we build form up? And how do we take form down, right? And every phase, every moment is, but it's a shape in itself in the present moment. And yet obviously it's there only because there's a history and it holds its history in the moment. And it also is pointing to a future. That's its essence. And so we are in this moment, we are a moment in time, you know, organizing a whole history and organizing a future. Somewhat conscious, but we organize a future in our mind, but we also, our whole organism is organizing a future. And formative embodiment is kind of blending those two, blending the forms and the dreams and the hopes in our mind, the desires, with somehow the underlying direction and formativeness of the full organism. And I don't know, hopefully that says something to you, right? But anyway, so there's a lot in embryology of many, many worth studying, you know. And of course, part of the embryological process is that there are three germ layers that organize, and these three germ layers, of course, develop to create our whole form. So everything we are is an expression of one or a combination of these three germ layers, the magic number three. Yeah. So let's just, okay, now here's quite a shift, right? So all that shifting protoplasm has become an iconic image, right? I think most of you may recognize this image. Here is a moment in time, right, that has evolved out of the, you know, the protoplasm that we began as. And so we recognize it, and it's an iconic image I think, you know, you don't have to be an adolescent to appreciate an adolescent boy. I think there are messages in this for us. And what it is, it's obviously a state of incredible readiness, right? As Hamlet said, readiness is all. There's something about the readiness, right? The power, the clarity, the observation, the attention, right? Of course, this is a readiness of defense, a readiness to respond, yeah? And so there's a whole energy in it, a whole intention in it, right? There's a coherence in this, and it's a readiness to respond to any threat. And in spite of the great tension, the dynamic tension, you can almost see him, if no threat appears, he can immediately soften. He can immediately take all that energy, all that readiness, and let it change form into a very soft, relaxed form. Or if necessary, he can respond with lightning speed, right? And this, in a way, it's a wonderful action sequence, because it's what we do in life, maybe not quite so dramatically. But every moment in time demands a response from us, right? And every situation demands a response to us. And of course, most situations in life are routine, and the forms we've developed for them are pretty automatic, and they work pretty well, you know? And then, of course, when situations show up that aren't routine, that are unexpected or extremely unexpected, that's when the forms underlying the readiness to action, we find out what we're ready for and what we're not ready for, what we have formed and what we do not have formed. You know? So this is kind of a readiness to the outside world to a great extent. There's an internal, of course, he's highly trained, highly prepared, highly practiced, and he's ready for the world and whatever it brings, right? And now we're going to look at one more image, which is a bit different, right? And this also a bit iconic. Some of you may have seen an image like that somewhere. And here we have really the opposite image, right? Instead of this incredible power prepared to meet the world, we have this great receptiveness to an inner world. Yeah. And in a way, those are the two great magnets of life, right? The way the outer world pulls us out, requires action, requires response, requires learning and complexity. And here we see the way the inner world, as a powerful magnet, draws us inwardly, you know? And this is a beautiful image of the peace that passeth understanding, yeah? That great potential in us, right? Perfectly aligned, perfectly inward. Well, not that I'm gonna wax philosophical about the Buddha, but we can appreciate that even this, you know, is a form of a kind of, if not enlightenment, a certain orientation to the deep inwardness that is also a part of us. And we really oscillate between these two kind of figures that are highly prepared, highly formed, highly trained and practiced for different purposes and ends. So, good, I can't really see anybody much, so I hope you're doing okay. I can't really, I don't get much direct feedback, as no one does, so we just keep rolling until the car stops. So hopefully it's a rhythm that you're comfortable with. Okay, we're gonna come out of the, right, so now we're back to present real time. I'd like to give you one, I'd like to read a little poem and then we'll actually do an exercise. And I think this really is a beautiful, it's a few lines of a poem. And, but it beautifully describes to me this process of formative embodiment. You know, the title is kind of The Awkward Walk of the Swan, yeah. And it's drawn from a book by David White. Some of you may know White, who's a poet and a writer. And he came across a poem by Rilke. And this is a translation by Robert Bly. So I'm going to read it and then kind of talk about it a little bit. And then we'll actually go into some simple exercises. So the swan, right? He or she nervously lets himself down into the water, which receives him gaily, which flows joyfully under and after him, wave after wave, while the swan, unmoving and calm and marvelously calm, is pleased to be carried, each moment more fully grown, more like a king, further and further on. So, you know, the context, of course, is that the swan, big bird, when it's walking, you know, on the land, it's such a big bird on such little feet, it's very awkward. It's kind of, you know, it kind of lumps around, and it's lucky to get anywhere, can't run very fast, it can't do much. And so when it's on the earth, it's a very awkward walk. And what you see is a very big bird kind of, you know, awkwardly moving along, right? And yet when it starts to approach the water and it begins to enter what you would call its elements, and it starts to give its weight and give its full body into the water, into this element, by finding its element and entering its element, there is a whole transformation that happens, right? That all of a sudden, as the poem says, right, it settles into the water. And instead of carrying him or herself around so awkwardly, the water now supports him, right? And he can swim gracefully along it. And the more he kind of experiences himself in his element, in the water, in this great force that supports him, he transforms and becomes more fully grown, more like a king, and moves further and further along, right? I think it's a beautiful image and metaphor for us, right? Looking for our elements, right? You know, and, you know, and when we actually find our element, right? Whether it's water or fire or air or earth, when it's really an element that supports us and resonates with us and we recognize it and we can live through it, then we are transformed, right? And all of our possibility of being emerges, and the king or the queen emerges in a natural way, and we don't have to push it, we don't have to fight it, we don't have to struggle for it. It just emerges in that moment of recognition. Yeah. And so I think a lot of embodiment actually is about that. It's about finding our element, right? Or what works as our element. And, you know, in a way, it's a discovery process. And what I've found is that, you know, people search for it, and some people are lucky and somehow find it early. But I found a lot of people, particularly in this day and age, are going through a lot of searching for what, you know, what is their element, you know, and they're stuck on an earth which isn't their element, right? Or they don't quite know what it is. Yeah. And I think what's beautiful about all the different possibilities in a conference like this is you see many elements in expression. You see powerful, you know, motion, and you just see fire, you know, you see some of the presentations are more about fire, right? Some are really softer and more about water. Some are air, takes us into a whole other dimension. And, you know, and some very earthy, wow, really settle us into grounding and centering. And so you can almost see the, you know, the different styles that each person brings, the different elements that person brings into their work. And they've discovered something personally, and they've discovered something professionally, and all of that has given them a shape and a form and ability to come out, right? A form that expresses this essence, this humanity, and this possibility, which I think is really the spirit of all of this. And so, you know, I think that's, you know, that's kind of what happened to me, that I just got lucky. I found myself in a place, you know, I mean, I studied literature, my first career. And out of all the teachers at university and grad school, there were maybe two that somehow, wow, you know, showed me something that touched my soul, right? And I remember once there was a teacher who had, you know, we'd been studying modern poetry, and we were, you know, we were reading poems and analyzing them and looking at images and looking at historical contexts and the personal stories of the authors and so forth. And it was interesting. And, you know, this teacher had a lot of information about all that, and it was very interesting. But one day he took one poem it was a poem by Wallace Stevens, The Idea of Order, Key West, and decided to read it to us. And it was about 5 minutes, and he read it to us. Something happened in him when he started to read it. And he read this poem, right? And it kind of, something started to build. And he kept reading, and he had the poem in one hand, and his other hand was kind of making gestures. And as he read, of course, he, you know, in a way, he became that poem. And as he read the poem, there was just a lifting, which was his voice, his rhythm, and his action. And when he finished the last line of that poem, you know, you had 25 absolutely stunned people in the classroom. We were just stunned into silence, right? And he also was kind of stunned, right? That somehow this form, this reading had taken us, had taken us over the bridge into this world. And everybody was just, didn't know where to go or what to say after that, because we had been transported into another world. And all of those elements somehow helped us make that transition. And we didn't even know what was happening until that last moment, right? The last word of the poem, that last gesture somehow unleashed this amazing state, yeah? And everybody filed out of the room a little bit confused, because we you know, it was just such a powerful moment. And so, you know, moments like that get you saying, that's for me. That's what I want to do. That's what I want to, right? And so we look for those. They're also called aha moments or that's for me moments, right? But it touches you in such a way that something is moved and you suddenly understand at so many levels, right? And there's a form for it. I think that's what's critical. It's not just in the ethers. It's not just in the mind. It's a form has somehow unleashed that power. And so freedom and power and love really all depend on forms. And so when we work with embodiment, we really unleash this power of forms. We work with it, yeah. And so, you know, when we listen to stories and we're working with people, we're really looking at all the things we've been talking about today, this formative process, right? There's a history, but you know, we start with the present moment because that contains all the past, and it in a way contains both the future that the organism is moving towards and another level of future, which is conscious and desired, and which we would also like to manifest. And the form is what guides us, right? You know, now I don't think I'm saying anything that's totally new, but you know, we work with it in a way that really is quite, I think, interesting. So let's do a little exercise, okay? And so I'm gonna ask you to do something, And what I'm gonna ask you to do is to just something simple, is to make a fist. Okay, so I don't think I have to show you. Once you just, you make a fist, and then I'm gonna ask you to hold the fist. You know, the fist that you just made, hold it. You know, hold it exactly the way you made it. Okay, good. So I'm gonna ask you a few questions while you're holding your fist that you made, right? My first question is, how long could you hold this fist that you just made, right? I mean, is this a fist, you know, that you could hold for a long time, or could you hold it for a couple of minutes and then your hand starts to fall off, right? So the question is, at what intensity did you make this fist, right? And of course, that was something you did. I didn't tell you how to do it. So you made a fist at a certain intensity, right? Which you can support first. Maybe some people could make a fist they can support for a long time, but some of you maybe can't support this fist for very long. And then secondly, what kind of fist is this, right? Because there are many kinds of fists. So, you know, what if you had to say, give a name or a word to the kind of fist you made, what kind of fist is this? Yeah. Right, so just some examples. It could be a fist of, wow, you be careful, because I'm right here with my fist and my power, right? So it could be a threat. Or it could be a fist like Rafa Nadal when he wins the tournament. Wow, a fist of victory, right? Or it could be a fist that just kind of grabs softly onto something, right? There are many, all kinds of fists, right? And so for some reason, you created a fist of a certain intensity and with a certain kind of quality and intention. So I don't know, I think it's kind of an interesting question, you know, that's the fist you created when you maybe didn't even think about those things. You didn't think about the intensity. You didn't think about the intention. You didn't think about the cost of supporting this fist, right? Because some fists, wow, it's a cost, right? Wow, it's a lot of energy, So let's take this fist. Okay, so in class, of course, we would talk about this, but you're gonna have to have a conversation with your other self. Right? So now let's keep this fist. And even for those of you who are kind of struggling with your fist, let's intensify it. Just a tiny step. When I mean tiny, when I say tiny, I mean tiny. Just a little bit, the same pattern, but just a little bit more. Oof, and notice what happens. Yeah, notice what shifts, right? In your hand, in your forearm. Maybe you notice something in your trunk, or maybe you notice something in other specific parts of your body. Yeah. Something happens, so the body starts to come in, is recruited in some way, okay? And let's actually take another, let's intensify it one more step, not too much, don't do yourself damage. Because, you know, you start to find out maybe if you really intensify it, this is stops being comfortable. This is like, whoa, this is tough on my hand and tough on me. And okay, so if you've gone over an edge, respect that edge and let yourself soften just a little bit. And notice what happens when you reduce the effort, right? Notice what happens to your breath and to the rest of your body and to your hand. And then you can let it soften a little bit more without giving up the form, right? And notice the changes, right? So, and notice how the intention of it, not just the feelings and the sensations, but how the intention of it changes, so this is still a fist, but it's a much softer fist. And what does this softer fist communicate to me? And what does it communicate to the outside? What do I have now for myself and, you know, and what gets communicated, right? And so maybe I want to support it differently with my arm, right? See. So here, you know, we're kind of, and so all of a sudden, as I follow this along, not only am I, you know, I find that there are kind of movements that start to accompany this kind of accordion process. My arm shifts, right? I really like having the fist. There's something about the fist, you know, it's really an innate gesture. I really like it. But I really want to do it differently. So how's that for a metaphor in our lives, you know, where we really want to do something, but the way we're doing it is too costly. You know, I really need to stand up for myself, but the way I'm doing it is really not very functional, right? But I need to do this. And many people don't know how to do it any other way. We have one gear. So all I do, all I know is intensity, you know, and then of course I roll over the other person. Or maybe all I know is really soft, you know, I've got the fists and I've got the, you know, but it's so soft that it doesn't really accomplish my intention. I get steamrolled, right? And so, you know, the question becomes, you know, from a formative perspective, right? What's my form in this moment in relation to whatever situation I'm in, right? And how is that form managing what's happening? And if it's managing it well without, extreme effort, right, then, you know, I'm happy with it. But if it's really too unformed, so it doesn't do, it doesn't protect me, or it doesn't get the message across, or it's too intense and people react and rebound to me, it's learning about how to manage this particular form in this particular moment so I don't put a strain on my heart, I don't use too much energy, too much sympathetic, you know, force, you know, I don't, you know, because every gesture, you know, of course, muscles need to be worked in a certain way. So the nervous system is doing a lot of work to manage the musculature in a precise way. So the muscle, the form is supported by the nervous system, obviously, but it's supported by the metabolic system. Even moving my pinky requires energy, right? And that energy, so it pulls on energy resources, metabolic resources, and it's got to be supported by the heart. Yeah. You know, and it's supported, of course, by so much more, right? And you can track back from a simple gesture its relation to the whole body, the whole mind, and it can go take you back into, you know, to really deep dimensions of the being, you know, because that's where it emerges from. Yeah. And so that's how the bridge gets built. And as Stanley Kelman, one of my teachers, says, it can take you back into quantum levels, right? Which some people might call spiritual, or, you know, what, you know, there may be many names for it, you know, deep pulse, deep tide. But so there's, you know, so that the gesture, the everyday gesture, the everyday dealing with the world and ourselves has the potential to really very small steps take us back to kind of source places in ourselves, core places, and help us reorganize and recreate and reform in such a way, wow, that these powerful instincts have a personal dimension, that I can manage them, I can influence, you know, when I need to act fast, I can do that. When I really need to take small steps, step back, step forward, I've trained myself, I've worked with myself to be able to do that. And, you know, this is a point in class where I'd ask you how you're doing, but I can't do that. So I'm going to kind of keep going. I hope you're doing okay with this, right? But you can work with any gesture like this, right? Most people have a world, a lexicon of gestures when they're talking or dealing with clients or whatever, which they don't pay any attention to, right? It's just part of the story. And they come and go so fast that we don't appreciate the massive information and the layering that is available in almost any gesture. Now, of course, some gestures are more potent and more critical than others. You know, I was working with a young woman not too long ago, and she was talking about her process, and she said, "Boy, I feel like I'm in a prison." Boom, you know. So, you know, and then she was going on with her story, but wow, you know, this is the shape of her prison. We stopped her there. Let's look at the shape of the prison, not just the feeling of the prison, because not just the emotions of the prison, which of course are powerful and important, but what's the shape of your prison, the action of your prison? Because here we have another doorway to take down that prison slowly, consciously, and really seeing why we created the prison in the first place. You know, the important question first is how, not why. When you get into the why, you start to spin all kinds of places. But when you look at the shape of your prison and how you're doing it, that gives you a wonderful kind of reverse engineering, you know, capability as to how you built that prison in the first place. Now, and of course, there are many, many techniques and methods that do this and wonderfully. But this is you know, when one starts to experience the power of these gestures and how they can be, they can take us really very quickly sometimes and very efficiently into how we organize our lives and the form and forms of our life. It's a very potent methodology. Yeah. So, and just, you know, a couple more things, and then we're kind of moving towards the end already. But you know, the three great, Karen Horney, who's a psychoanalyst, some of you may have read or heard of, studied with Freud. She basically said, had an interesting book. She talks about how the three great urges of humans are, and this shouldn't be a surprise, but it's nicely packaged, is, you know, the power, you know, the search for love. Love and lovingness is one of the great motivators. Freedom, the feeling of freedom, is another great motivator. And the feeling of empowerment, right? That these are, for her, the three great motivators. And as profound motivators, they are also formers. You know, love needs to find forms, right? Actions, behaviors, ways of expression, you know. Freedom also needs to find its forms. Freedom isn't just, right, pure space, not when you have a body. Freedom also looks for forms, you know. So it's freedom through form, right? And empowerment, power, which we, you know, it also, we want to have power in our lives, right? Power also looks for forms. So formativeness is really critical on so many levels, right? And some people really are more love folks. They're really looking for ways to form love because that's somehow what they resonate with. And others are more freedom folks. At first freedom, and then they can love, you know. Some people love first, then they can be free, you know. And others need to kind of feel empowered before they can step into a relationship and feel love. If they don't have a certain sense of self and empowerment, moving into love or freedom isn't the same. So we're really looking for forms that really accomplish and create many things. And so working with, you know, we work a lot with the gesture as a doorway, right? Because the human being is built to act. And I think this you find it's already, you know, not just embodiment, people know that, but, you know, mainstream is good for the 4E cognition, you know, mainstream is appreciating how central motion and expression and action is to cognition and to everything we are. Yeah, you know a person by their actions, by their postures, by their, you know, behaviors. And so we work with gestures, with the hands, of course, with the whole body. But the hands are what are called cueing organs. They somehow start the process, right? So, you know, I want just to finish up and we'll open up for questions. But I worked recently with a young woman who was kind of, you know, she was being kind of overwhelmed by her ex-partner who had criticized her for years and made her feel smaller, and she never could do anything right for him. And her mother, who was invasive and overwhelming and, you know, same message, you can't do anything right. And she had gotten to a point where she was just cracking, right? And she, you know, and as we talked, she said, oh, I just have to have this stop, you know? And she came up with this gesture, you know, okay. So her body knew, her system knew what she needed to do. She had to, but she could only organize a soft stop. And whenever the partner, the mother came in, this fell apart. So the practice became, okay, let's start with what your system knows you need. Good, okay, feel it, yeah. Okay, intensify it, wow, a little more. Wow, what does that feel like? Well, interesting, you know. Okay, a little more, boom, wow, you know, and all of a sudden this created a whole feedback loop of feeling and sensation, right? Her arm came in, wow. You know, and she sat up differently just from following this gesture, right? Okay, take it down. Ooh, what does that feel like? Not so good. Very familiar. I don't like this. Take it back up. Wow. You know, now point it to your ex-partner. Whoa. Wow. And all of a sudden we had a warrior sitting there, right? You know, point it to your mother. Wow. The warrior gets stronger. Now point it to your own mind. Right, ooh, that was more challenging, right? But it was a beautiful way in which the hand was a cueing organ, which showed her how she could recruit all of her resources into building a form that really established her in the world that she really wanted to be in and not be so vulnerable. So a lot of ways that this can work. And a beautiful thing about it, it's a work that anybody can do, you know, young people, you know, middle-aged people, older people, we can work with our forms. You know, there are so many wonderful ways to work and so many wonderful procedures, but this is a great way to leverage very powerful possibilities in our lives. Okay, so I think we're pretty much there. I don't know if we have time for a question or two.
Yes, there are no questions now, and we are really getting to the time to wrap up. Okay. I really loved your presentation, and you got me with this fist because I made it like a strong martial fist, and then, oh, how long can I really hold it? That was a tricky one. Yeah. So, and I love the story at the end because it's really showed how this can be so powerful tool to just transform the way we deal with things around us. Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
Do I have a minute to show one quick slide about, you know, what I do next?
Okay. Yes. Do it now.
Thank you very much. Okay. So we'll just open this up. And for people who may be interested, this is kind of just a little bit of information about I'll be doing. We're hoping to be able to start a course, a three-module course in London in December. We of course are, you know, watching to see what is going on with COVID and with policies. We're hoping to be able to start in December. If not, we would start it in February. But right now we're holding on to the possibility of December. I'm also going to be presenting at another conference, the Science of Integrative Psychotherapy Conference. And then here down below, you see the people who are organizing me in London, a very appreciative First Expression and CTT, a cranial sacral biodynamics school. So that would be the information to kind of be able to see what's next so we don't lose contact. Okay.
Okay.
So,
please go out of the screen. Yes. Okay, okay, so let's wrap up and with some announcements. And then you have, you'll at the end be, you will have a minute to say just your, like a top tip to be more efficient with your body, more with your body. But first before that, please folks, this is the, really the, some of you are probably more on the screen than anything else in the last several days. So do some movement, get out of the house, get some sun if there is any. And for those of you that want to share more with your fellow attendees, use the coffee break rooms. You will find the link in your in the portal. And also you can join the Facebook groups where you can also chat with other nice persons about everything you, that you've seen, heard, your thoughts. And so just before we end, this was a really great lecture, and simultaneously there were seven other great lectures on other channels, and every 2 hours they're coming, so it's really impossible to look at them all in the time of the conference. So I really invite you to purchase the recordings of the conference. It's really like a library of recordings. With it, you will also get the audio files, so you can just listen to them like podcasts. You get session cheat sheet notes, so just the short notes of the sessions. You don't have to look at everything, and then you can go to the video if it's really great for you. And also the maybe the best thing about it is that you get learning lists, so you get a really almost university-like approach where you can go structured through the materials and just digest them in your own time. Also during the conference, the price is 50% off, which is not a small thing. And if you do this, if you upgrade, you will do yourself a great gift, and also for the humans around you, and for those humans that cannot afford, you will enable them to see this, to watch this for free. So just before we end, James, please give us your like a top tip for being more embodied.
Right. So, well, a top tip in the moment is literally to start to pay attention to how, you know, particularly when you're talking about something important. That's when, you know, we really go a bit more mental, we go more emotional. And if, as we're talking about something important, we really either because we notice it, or we can even ask our friend or our therapist to notice it, to begin to pay more attention to the gestures that accompany that story. And if we can bring that awareness to that touch of mindfulness, whatever you want to call it, and slow them down a little bit, we start to get a whole other layer of information about what's going on for us in our lives that we might not be able to access through feeling or sensation or emotion, even though those are important, right? This gives us another layer of access to our nervous system and our history. So really just beginning to pay attention to the story, not just as body reading, but a story of our own forming and how we participate in that through our actions and gestures. I don't know if it's a complicated tip, but it's a tip.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure.
Appreciate all of you doing the show and helping us out. Great. Okay.
Thank you so much, Dr. James. It was wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
We're really grateful to have you here.
Great.
Okay. See all of you on the next session.
Okay. Great. Bye.